This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's not coming after a very good weekend. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And unfortunately, we have to talk about the fact that the Cardinals lost at home to the Oakland Raiders. This is what the season has become after the hope against the San Francisco 49ers and some of the play against Kansas City. Then they do go and do this. So, yeah, that's really kind of gross, wouldn't you think? Did it sort of just undo every bit of positivity you had about the team? Because it sort of did that for me.
Yeah, it became odd because we felt like this was the game that we could see the progress, we could see the growth, we could see the good. And I mean, there were flashes of a lot of that. It was just never sustained or anything of that nature. And instead, we end up with a last second loss to what was the worst team in the NFL. And I think the part that hurts the most is that with last night's results of the LA Rams beating the Kansas City Chiefs, the Raiders were able to overtake the Cardinals. So not only did they beat the Cardinals in a head-to-head matchup, but then they overtook the Cardinals or retook the second pick from the Cardinals in the 2019 NFL draft. Now, this will be a race to watch down the stretch, but for now, they hold the second pick, drop the Cardinals back down to the third pick. And so it's like salt in the wound. Like, not only did we beat you, but we still get the better draft pick.
Yeah, good old strength of schedule. So what we have on the show tonight is recording on a Tuesday night, as we normally do. I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourself this holiday weekend. Don't eat too much turkey and don't think about the Cardinals too much on Thursday, because there's not a lot to be thankful for right now. We're going to talk about what went wrong against Oakland. We're going to talk about any possible positives. There's some roster moves, some kind of interesting roster moves to talk about. We'll react to, in addition to, Steve Wilks talked about the possibility of some changes. What changes need to happen right now? And then we'll kind of talk about the end. At this point, would we fire Steve Wilks? And so that's what we got coming up on the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So let's talk about, to start, what went wrong against Oakland? Ultimately, what went wrong?
I mean, I think the easier route to go would be just to go over like the four things that went right, right? Because that's kind of the reality of it. What went wrong? I think your rookie quarterback took a step back. I mean, he wasn't. I think I've heard certain guys, like I heard Dave Burns say it was regression. I don't know if it was regression. I think people overstated how well the offensive line played. There was still quite a few pressures in the game. I think it was the most pressures and knockdowns that the Raiders had all season as a team. And so it's not like their offensive line exactly played well, but neither did our rookie quarterback and Josh Rosen. He went back and forth in some of his play. There was a little bit of there were some problems. I think that's the easiest way to say it. And you could tell that, unfortunately, the reality of football, something that we've seen, whether it be Carson Palmer, Tom Brady, I mean, good to great NFL quarterbacks to maybe the greatest of all time, when they're hit repeatedly over and over and over in games, it begins to weigh on them. And I think we saw that from Rosen. He missed some throws that he has hit most of the season, especially high. There were some throws he made that were definitely rookie decisions, and you're just like, oh, you can't make that decision. But in the end, it just ended up being a performance to forget, despite throwing for a career high in touchdown passes in a game.
Which, you know, he completed only 9 passes. 3 of them went for touchdowns. It was kind of an interesting game from Rosen, from my perspective, is the fact that he didn't play badly, but he's looked, ever since that first start when we were talking about how he didn't look like a rookie at all, looked like a veteran out there making great decisions, accuracy on his throws, like just incredible throws. He's been very much a rookie pretty much since then. It probably has to do with the pressure. Now, ultimately for me, what it came down to with Rosen is the fact he had the 2 turnovers, those 2 interceptions, and really both of them were on him. He's had some interceptions that weren't on him. Like the 3 interception game against the Broncos, the 1 ball was tipped. He can't do anything about that. Receiver's got to catch the ball. The one that got picked off is another one that got picked off in return for touchdown. It was J.J. Nelson just ran the wrong route. He stopped running the route and he threw the ball to somewhere where the player was supposed to be. Now, the 2 interceptions that he had against the Raiders, the first of which you look at, and he didn't see something. He tried to force it out there, which is, we've seen quarterbacks do that. You know, Brett Favre did it, Carson Palmer did it. But when you talk about the pressure, he wasn't kept clean on that play, because a defender grabbed his shoulder, and he ended up taking, it wasn't a mechanically sound throw. So he kind of chucked it up there and it got picked off. So not a great decision, not a great throw. Wasn't kept completely clean. He was a little bit off balance because he got grabbed. His shoulder got grabbed. He didn't get hit. He got the grab. The second one, though, that one was, and it was like another couple of other throws. Like you talk about, he was there sailing high. His mechanically, he's throwing some, he's getting some throws a little bit high. The throw that got off of Sherfield's hands and then got picked off by Carl Joseph, that was the result of just throwing it too high. That's a throw because he was covered. If he puts that right in his chest, it's a completion, no problem. But between the throw being high and the fact that the Cardinals don't really have players who are all that adept at making plays on the ball, then what he ended up having is ended up another interception. So,
Jess, you can just say they don't have good receivers.
They ended up only being 9 for 20. 3, you can count 3 as legitimate drops. David Johnson just dropped 2 passes. Christian Kirk dropped a 3rd down pass. So he should be 12 for 20. And you know, it's a 60% clip. On the throw down to the field to J.J. Nelson, where it was a contested throw. Guess what? You're not going to get J.J. Nelson making contested catches.
Right.
And in on that play, I mean, you like that push. In fact, Bruce Arians does that every single time. Steve Wilks looks at the play and says, Chase Edmonds is wide open and has all sorts of open field. So probably a better decision would have gone there. So for me, though, the major thing was not necessarily Josh Rosen playing poorly. It's they turned the ball over twice and didn't create turnovers. And you lose the turnover battle. Guess what? You're not likely to win the game. And the fact that they lost the turnover battle and still really should have won tells you what type of game that it was. They had other problems. Another thing that went wrong for me, obviously, it was a comedy of errors in the final 3 minutes of the game. It was just, what in the world? It starts with the dropped interception by Bynes. I have a hard time, and Steve Wilks said it several times, and we heard Bruce Arians say it all the time. You know, those defensive players have to make those plays. Defensive players it's a thing that's hard to tell. Defensive players are reacting and don't expect the ball to hit their hands. And so they really have to be focused. So Josh Bynes dropping the interception, that's a problem. But it's not the biggest problem. It's just the fact that the drive continued. But then you have what is what I caught, and I wrote about this, four critical errors in the last 2.5, 2:39. And it started with Jermaine Gresham. You know, they have the ball. They should be able to run the clock pretty good. So it's second down. They run the ball with David Johnson, and it should take them to the 2-minute warning. It should take them to the 2-minute warning. But Carl Joseph, he's laying on top of Larry Fitzgerald, doesn't get up. Jermaine Gresham's on the field. He didn't like that. He pulls him off. He didn't do anything egregious in terms of how he reacted, but that is that's in the rule books. You cannot take players yourself off of the pile.
Well, and the craziest thing is this. Carl Joseph is a moron and was helping the Cardinals run clock by doing that. That's an actual defensive strategy to continue to run the clock and to delay the game, as you do it for as long as you can to delay the game and put pressure on the offense to try to get the ball back. Carl Joseph was doing them a favor.
So they gets called for holding. I mean, personal foul. So it becomes 3rd and 23 or 3rd and 26.
Well, but the problem wasn't even, I mean, the personal foul was stupid, like you said.
The clock stops.
Exactly. It stops the clock because you can't have an offensive penalty is it 4 minutes or five? I can't even ever remember the rules, but it's inside a certain amount of time, you can't have an offensive penalty and the clock continues to run, because if that was the case, offenses would just fall start down the field and just let the clock run down.
Right. So, and so it stops the clock. So it's not the 2 minute. Now it's 2:34. It's 2:34. So that should have taken the 2 minute warning. They should have been able to run one more play, get it down to about 1:20. Even if they don't get the first down, punt the ball. And, you know, it's that about 1:10. And then mistake number two. So crazy. 3rd and 26. David Johnson busts free and scores a touchdown. Now, David Johnson made a mistake. Shouldn't have gone into the end zone. He should have stopped. He should have knelt it down inside the five. But it didn't matter anyway. Ricky Seals Jones got called for hold.
And to be fair to David, he hasn't had a big play in 2 years. So he was just excited to see open field in front of him.
Right. But game awareness, I mean, that's what, you know, I believe is, hopefully you've got to be game aware. And that's one of those cases. But ultimately, it didn't matter, because Ricky Seals Jones gets called for hold and it didn't even affect the play. It wouldn't have mattered. He would have busted free in the open anyway and done the same thing. So what should have happened is that they should have made it to the 2 minute warning again and have a first down or have a touchdown. And so they're up by 8. Instead, now it's 3rd and 23. They run one more play. It takes them to the 2 minute. So they're punting at the 2 minute warning instead of punting with about 1:20 left or even running the clock out. Andy, this is another critical mistake. Andy Lee, who had a fine, overpunted it. It was absolutely critical to not punt it into the end zone, and he punted into the end zone. There was no chance for the coverage team to get there. His kick had no chance of getting downed. Then the 32-yarder that Benet Ben-Wickery gave up when he basically just gave it. That play was like Justin Bethel in the playoff game against Aaron Rodgers. He just gave up on the play and didn't think anything was happening. Got his eyes caught in the backfield, and Aitman went right past him. That really set things up. After that, the game was basically over. Between those mistakes, the penalties they had, I mean, 7 penalties during the game, and then on top of that, the fact they lost the turnover battle, I mean, they were doomed, and they still almost won.
I know. That's the sad part. That's how bad the Raiders are. I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's how bad the Raiders are. And the Cardinals found a way to screw it up. I mean, that's – go ahead.
I was going to say, then there's the run defense that they started getting – they did well in the beginning. They did well at the end, but then they got gashed in the second and third quarter. It was continuing to be a thing. And Antoine Bethea's frustrated as heck after the game, saying, you got to stay in your gap. So from everything we're hearing – and this is from players too. So in terms of the defense with the run defense, the coaches are getting him in the right position. They're not doing it.
Well, and that's the thing is, who do we blame it on? I mean, you and I mean, fans, media, all like, I mean, I've seen Mike Jarecki tweet it out. I've seen Ken Summers tweet it out. I've seen John Gambadoro and Dave Burns talk about it. Oh, it's Robert Kimdiche. Well, guess who didn't play yesterday?
Kimdiche didn't play.
So is it Robert Kimdiche? Like, that's who we've guesstimated, right? That's who we've kind of all laid the blame on as a cohesive media unit. And now it's like, well, maybe it's not Kimdiche. Maybe, and I think it goes back to something you and I've talked about quite a bit. Maybe it's just the linebackers. Maybe the linebackers are so bad, they don't know where their gaps are. They don't know how to fill. And so all of a sudden you're getting free runs, into lanes that you weren't expecting to.
Yep. Definitely plenty of things. Anything else that went wrong that kind of stands out?
I mean, obviously defensively there were issues up and down. I mean, Jamar Taylor got burned and then got pulled.
Geez.
And then got cut. I mean, like, this was a banner weekend for Jamar Taylor, a guy that you and I both were kind of excited about. Like,
hey, he was a legitimate starter for 2 years.
But again, I think, and this is, and you and I, this is the one concern both you and I talked about coming into the season with him. He's a guy that what his success was is kind of how they were going to use Buddha, right? So you're going to use a guy in Buddha Baker in a position he's never really done before, because he was more of a safety than a slot corner. And you're going to take a guy in Jamar Taylor who struggled as an outside corner in Miami, had his most success and got a contract extension in Cleveland as a slot corner / kind of extra safety. And then you're going to, put him back out at the position that he struggled at and then be kind of surprised. It's just one of those self-scouting things that we've talked about on this show quite a bit, especially this season, that there's been some issues in the scouting department within their own organization, that they're putting guys in a position that is probably not their strength. And I think Taylor was kind of, I think he's kind of one of the poster children for that. Like, you look at him, he struggled playing boundary corner. It's not his strength. They moved him inside for a couple of plays when Baker needed to come out and things like that. It wasn't awful. Well, Baker's out this game, so you make the move with Ben Wickery to the starting slot safety and move Taylor back out to boundary. And lo and behold, within one play, he's gone. And a guy that I honestly don't even know his name took his place.
Leonard Johnson.
I was going to say Gus Johnson, but then I remember that's the announcement of college football. So, it was one of those things. I mean, it's something that we've seen, unfortunately, consistently this year. And it hasn't gotten fixed yet.
And then with that, we'll move on the next segment of the Rise Up Seabird podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Whip. When we come back, we'll talk about a little more positive. What's the good that we got out of the game? Maybe we won't talk about it for very long, but there are a couple of things. Let's get up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Positives. What was there to celebrate? There wasn't a ton. There were some things that you had to like.
I thought you loved the resolve of Christian Kirk. That's the first thing. You said it. I mean, he had a bad drop on the third down pass that would have gotten the team a first down. Instead, results in a punt. And that was coming, I think that was right after the interception, right? That was the second drive after the interception.
I think so.
And so, like, instead of coming back, responding with your own touchdown drive, you respond by dropping a third down pass and putting yourself in a bad position. And then all of a sudden, it was several series later, but a couple series later, you get a screen pass and you make a couple moves and you take it to the house. And it was just, it was exactly the playmaking that the Cardinals have lacked as a, as an offense throughout the season. We haven't seen a big play like that all year. And that was a big play. And I thought, moreover, it was an important play because we just, we haven't seen that from this team this year. And it shows kind of signs of life and in what to look forward to, because that's kind of where we're at in this season, what you can potentially look forward to with Kirk on the roster.
Right. And sitting next to one of the guys in the press box who, one, covered him as a high school player and then paid attention to him in college, is that, that that's exactly the sort of play that he got. That's exactly the sort of play. And so not only does it bounce back from the drop and gets that fantastic touch, because that that was a thing of beauty between Josh Rosen changing the play at the line of scrimmage, the offensive line holding up, Christian Kirk shaking a tackler and turning it into a touchdown. But it's not only that, he also had a critical catch late in the game as well, before the Larry Fitzgerald catch for the second touchdown, was that leaping catch on the sideline, which is, God, we haven't, I mean, we what have we seen, like two of those types of catches this year? Chad Williams had one, and even it didn't even count. And then Christian Kirk, you've had very little, you know, ball hawk skills up high. And we finally got that from Christian Kirk. Even though the receiver production's been down, the passing offense has been down, there is a lot of optimism. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about what Christian Kirk's bringing to this team in the years to come. He's got the right approach. And it looks like he probably is going to drop a pass or two when you don't want him to. But he is a big play threat.
And drops are one of those things, like, they suck, but they're kind of, I mean, for every Larry Fitzgerald where you're appalled when a drop actually happens, there's everybody else. Yeah, there's everybody else that just has drops at inopportune times.
And the second thing, obviously, you have to be thrilled about, David Johnson looked fantastic in the running game. The problems that we saw under Mike McCoy, there was uncertainty, he was hesitant, was everything that you'd been missing. He was running north-south. He made an effort to say, okay, I'm not going to try and kick everything out, but, you know, when I've got an opening and I can get 4 yards, I'm going to get 4 yards. He was physical, and you got good big plays. You got big plays again. Bust out for 134 yards. Amazing. And you're
137, but yeah.
137. And so you see, again, so you're seeing progress from week to week. And what you can see where Byron Leftwich is having a positive impact, especially when it comes to David Johnson. And they're getting him going. And getting him going should get other players going.
Here's a crazy stat. And I don't know if you knew this, but before Mike McCoy was let go, David Johnson's 16-game pace, so 7 games, 16-game pace, 765 yards, 11 touchdowns rushing. That's not bad. I mean, 11 touchdowns isn't bad. 46 catches for 379 yards, which is abhorrent, and 2 touchdowns. Now Johnson's on pace for over 1,500 yards from scrimmage. He's on pace for over 1,000 yards rushing and on pace for just under 500 yards receiving. That's crazy to me. That's just 3 games. And so that's not like 3 games projected out. That's his on pace now. Like, yeah, his per game pace now is over 1,000 yards rushing. If I would have told you after game 7, after that Denver Broncos game, that the Cardinals, that David Johnson would gain 1,000 yards this year, you would have laughed. There's no way anybody would have thought that. And you know, obviously health is going to be the issue here, but to have 629 yards now, when after that game, after the game against the Broncos, David Johnson had 335 yards rushing, in seven games. Like that's just absurd. To see that pace go back up that yard. I mean, he's in his three games, he has 294 yards rushing. He has just under 150 yards receiving on 12 catches. I mean, you're back to a David Johnson type workload, a David Johnson type pace on offense. And I think the best thing is this. In these three games, he's averaging almost 5 yards per carry. So all of a sudden he's gaining. That was kind of one of the things that we talked about. He's averaging 4.7 yards per carry in these three games. So like Jess said, it's not just that David Johnson, they're using him better, that they're giving him avenues to run in better. It's that he's taking advantage of it and he looks really good doing it.
You have to be thrilled as well with Chandler. I mean, I wasn't actually, okay, I'm going to say this. You got the stats from Chandler Jones. So you've got four more sacks. The Cardinals are the only team in the NFL with multiple sacks in every single game this season. They continue to do that. That being said, I was a little bit disappointed that Chandler Jones didn't have a better game. He had one legitimate sack and then one sack he was credited for in the fourth quarter in that final drive when Derek Carr gave himself up at the line of scrimmage and he was touched down by Jones. He got credit for sack for that. Going up against Colton Miller, I wanted him to go crazy. That said, they did continue to pressure the quarterback and, four sacks is nothing to sneeze at. They continue to get to the quarterback. They continue to do so.
Yeah, and that's big. I mean, they need to have some positives heading out of this year. And I think, obviously, the production of Chandler Jones and the defensive line, the pressure that they create is important and something that they need to continue to be good at. Because when you look at it, they've struggled with consistency in the secondary. I mean, we saw Jamar Taylor give up a touchdown to Jared Cook. We saw Patrick Peterson fall down and give up a touchdown to Brandon LaFell before that game. And this is, not to go back to the negatives, but before that game against the Los Angeles Chargers, who do not have a good defense, and the San Francisco 49ers, who do not have a good defense. The Raiders had scored zero touchdowns. They had scored 9 points combined in those two games.
Hey, we're supposed to be talking about positives.
And so, right. So, and so that's the thing is like, you need those positives of consistent pass rush of Josh Bynes playing well. You need positives of Antoine Bethea being a force in the box in the run game.
Corey Peters had 8 tackles.
Corey Peters continues to shine and be completely underrated by everyone, including us on this podcast. I mean, we talk about Corey, but not nearly enough. I think we lament the struggles of every other defensive lineman or the consistency issues of every other defensive lineman and overlook a guy playing less than, I think, what is he up to 60% of the snaps played?
You might be creeping up on there.
But, I mean, we're talking about a guy that doesn't even play 3/4 of the snaps. I mean, and he's playing at such a high level again. And he's over 30, isn't he?
That's a good question.
Yeah, so he's up to 63. So they're playing him more. He turns 30, or he just turned 30 this year. Like, he's had 2 Achilles tears. And
that means he's got 2 new Achilles tendons.
That's right. Like, they're explosive. So, and on the season, I mean, again, he's a guy that he's got 2 sacks and 6 tackles for loss on only 63% of the snaps. He has 8 plays made behind the line of scrimmage. And think about this. Nobody else on the team outside of Jones has that many. I mean, this guy plays 63% of the snaps. This isn't like you know, this isn't like a guy that's playing at the Chandler Jones amount of plays. So it's awesome to see a player. I'm sorry, Benson Mawaya does. I don't want to short sell Benson. He's played really well this year. But
you know who's another player that's been incredibly productive in a very, very, very small number of snaps is Zach Moore, a guy that probably no one knows. In fact, in the press box, when someone was like, Zach Moore got this, I'd be like, who? Who's that? He has 3 sacks this year. So
three sacks. And again, you want to talk about snap counts. Like, this is a guy that's not playing much.
He played 15 snaps. He had a sack. He had 2 quarterback hits. And he had a tackle for loss.
Right. And so that's a guy that is playing. I mean, he hasn't even played that much. He's played less than 20% of the snaps. And in his productive games, he's the most amount of snaps he's played is 36. And that wasn't even a good game for him.
And that's when he was playing. That's because he was playing defensive tackle.
Right. And so now, you know, in his successful games, he's playing like 10 right. to 15 snaps. But that's the thing. That is honestly one of the things that Steve Wilks' defense has missed this season, and something that he had consistently in Carolina, were these waves of pass rushers. The guys he didn't have to take out in Carolina were Star Lotulelei and Kawan Short. And so they've got their star in Corey Peters, a run stopper, a guy that can push the pocket inside. He's not an interior penetrator, but he's a guy that can push the pocket. And so they've been searching for that, you know, that Kawan Short. They've tried Gunter. They've tried Olsen Pierre. They've tried, obviously, Robert Kimdiche. It's just nobody's kind of latched onto the position. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that's been one of the struggles this year. But the positive is that you're getting production from limited players, and those are important things to have. Again, when you're searching for positives in a season, those are important things to have, because you might say, well, they need a starter. Well, honestly, starters are a little like secondary starters. Now, Kawan Short's role is important, and that's going to be hard to fill. But secondary starters, like a secondary pass rusher opposite Chandler Jones, is going to be a lot easier to fill than finding a guy that can come in 10 snaps and create 3 disruptive plays.
Right, and they've got 2 of those guys between Benson Mayoa and Zach Moore. They've got guys who can produce on a limited amount of snaps.
Well, and not just that, what that means is when you take Chandler Jones off the field for 5 plays or 3 plays here and 3 plays there, you're not going, oh, crap, we just got beat because we had no pressure. No, you're saying, oh, okay, Zach's able to give us 100% effort and create a quarterback hit and a sack. And then people are going to go, well, maybe you should play him more. No, that's why they're
he was great for 20 snaps.
Right. As soon as you ask him to do more, you're
in production.
Right. Yeah. So it's just one of those things. Like, some guys are built to be bench players and they're hard to find. And I would say, I mean, obviously in this defense, it doesn't matter, but I would say Josh Morrow is a guy that they miss on this team, because they miss a guy that can come in and give them productive run stopping snaps for 20 to 25 snaps a game. They don't have it right now. And so, you know, obviously, like I said, in this defense, he's not going to work as well, but they just don't have that. So when you look at it from those perspectives, I think those are all positives that you can take from this game. I think the other thing you can take from this game is that when Josh Rosen makes throws, man, that guy can make some throws. And I saw somebody make this comment, like, well, even Blaine Gabbert made wild throws. The throws that Josh Rosen make, the wow throws that Rosen makes, are more akin to like Carson Palmer wow throws.
Yes.
Like throws that only a limited number of – I mean, now it's not fair to talk about, because all of a sudden we've got Patrick Mahomes doing things that like nobody has done with the football ever before. But like Rosen is more of a – of your typical kind of dropback quarterback.
Josh Rosen is very much a Carson Palmer.
Right. And so when you look at him from that perspective, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about anticipation. You're talking about arm strength that is just not seen very often in the NFL. And so it becomes about consistency for Josh. But I think you continue to be excited about his potential, knowing that he's severely limited with playmakers and offensive line. I don't know. I know we didn't plan on talking about this, but did you see that tweet from Daniel Jeremiah today?
No, I did not.
Okay. So there was a tweet by Daniel Jeremiah, and I was going to write about it. So it's Tuesday night. So write about it, you know, for Wednesday or Thursday. So, you know, checklist for building a roster in today's NFL: role, number of players, quarterback, obviously one, pass rusher, you need two, offensive playmakers, you need three, defensive playmakers, you need three, and then quality offensive linemen, you need three. And if you were to go through the Cardinals' like list of players, obviously the quarterback's more to be decided than like to. I think it's unfair to say that Josh Rosen's a franchise quarterback already, but I think you're comfortable with that. But, you know, they have one pass rusher, like we just talked about. They have Chandler Jones, who's, you know, more than elite pass rusher. They have a playmaker in David Johnson, and you're starting to feel better about Christian Kirk. But I wouldn't put the pressure on him of being a special playmaker this time. They obviously have two additional playmakers on defense. If you put Jones as a pass rusher, they obviously have Buda Baker and Patrick Peterson. But it's this, the bugaboo is that when you look at quality offensive linemen, can you really say that they have any?
They have offensive linemen.
Right. And so when you're judging a quarterback, and that's what I would say because I've already seen some people start to, I don't want to say sour, but cool. I'll say cool on Josh Rosen hype. And so if you look at this list from Daniel Jeremiah and you say, okay, you know, three offensive playmakers and three quality offensive linemen. And this is not take anything away from Larry Fitzgerald at this stage of his career. He's still a phenomenal wide receiver. I wouldn't say he's a playmaker anymore. He's a guy you can force feed the ball to. You can feed targets to. I would say David Johnson's still a playmaker. I think Christian Kirk has the ability to get to that level. But they don't have three offensive playmakers. They don't have three guys that can make a play anytime, anywhere on the field. And like we said, they don't have quality offensive linemen. So when you're looking at it through the lens of like, oh, well, Josh Rosen struggled in this game. And that's, I mean, you and I talked about that to open the show. It was not his best performance. I think you need to take all of that with a grain of salt. Because it's not a fair fight, basically, with Rosen. Like he doesn't have those six additional offensive players on his side to really make up for it.
And with that, we'll move on from the positives to talk about some of the changes on the roster. That's coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the Cardinals have made some roster moves, some of them a little bit surprising, others not necessarily. But let's talk about what we've seen. So we knew that, well, one, Matthew McCrane was added to the roster on Saturday to kick for Phil Dawson. He was cut Monday. Jamar Taylor was cut. Then they also brought up some players. So they promoted Jalen Tolliver, one of the undrafted rookie receivers. Okay, interesting. They re-signed David Amerson, whatever you call him, who they signed last week and then cut last week before the game. And they also brought up Chris Jones. And so you get that roster, churning the roster. And then they cut Vontarius Dora, who they promoted the active roster, cut him. He's probably going to go back to practice squad. And then instead of re-signing Matthew McCrane to the practice squad, they go and sign former Arizona State stud, Sang Gonzalez. Very, very exciting for ASU fans. and local fans, because people have been wanting the Cardinals to get Zane Gonzalez since 2016, to be perfectly honest, since he came out of the draft. Some interesting moves, to say the least. Now, the Jamar Taylor move, I think, was several weeks in the works, because he was supposed to be the starter. He lasts two games before he's replaced. Now, by week 10, he should have the defense kind of figured out. He should be able to play a role. And then to, within a couple of plays, just be basically useless, give up a touchdown, and get replaced by a guy who was signed, 3 days before? Now, Taylor didn't completely get benched. He was used in run support, like in their nickel defense when they were more expecting a run. He was still out in the field, but I'm not surprised, but it goes down as another disappointment at the cornerback position.
It is, and it's one of those situations where, you know, it's a this continuing revolving door, and I think when the season ends and people begin to kind of, and we're already seeing it, but people begin to kind of line up the negatives and positives about whether or not they retain Steve Keim or whether or not they made the right decision in letting Steve Keim go. I think one of the things that's going to continually come up is these situations where they continue to chase the same position all 6 years of his tenure. I mean, can we name – I can't. So can you name all the cornerbacks who have started – multiple games, not just one for an injury, but like we're expected starters across from Patrick Peterson over the last 6 years. I mean, just in the last couple of years, we can point out Jamar Taylor and Benay Benwickery. You can point out Justin Bethel, Brandon Williams, and Tremont Williams and Marcus Cooper. So,
you also have William Gay. You've got Antonio Cromartie. That was a success for most of his season. So yeah, it's in fairness, that's hard to find someone who can, because you have someone of the caliber of Peterson, that is going to automatically expose the other cornerback. And so you can't just go with a body out there.
Right.
You have to do something. Now, the problem has been, is that their draft picks at the position aren't panning out ever.
Well, but I think the other problem would be with that is, and this is not to get like too deep into this topic, but when you've drafted three off-ball linebackers in the first 40 picks of the draft and none of them are impact starters, I mean, one's not even on the roster in Kevin Minter, Deion Buchanan's unlikely to be back next year, and Hassan Reddick is still clearly learning how to play football without his hand in the dirt. And then, but then you still don't have a corner. Like you said, you can't just put bodies out there. Typically it takes high end talent. Like you'll get Richard Sherman's where they were drafted in the fifth round and they pan out. But usually you need to invest either draft capital or financial, free agent money. And they haven't really done either. I mean, Brandon Williams is their only day two or day one pick in the Keim era for a pure corner. I guess if you want to label Matthew and Baker those things, but neither of them were starting
and outside. Brandon Williams, you can't really call a pure corner. He played the position 1 year at college.
500 snaps in college. And so that's the thing is like you said, when you're continually throwing crap at the wall just to see what sticks, this is going to happen. And so you get a positive in Benwickery, you get a negative in Jamar Taylor. Like you said, the writing was on the wall. It's unfortunate that it didn't work out. I don't think it really cost him a sixth rounder or whatever.
Seventh rounder in 2020.
Yeah, so I mean, it basically cost them nothing. I mean, that pick could have been used on you and I, and it wouldn't have mattered. So, it's just one of those situations. Now, of course, with the Cardinals' luck, the Browns will draft the greatest wide receiver of all time while the Cardinals are still looking for a wide receiver or something crazy of that ilk will happen. But, like you said, it's not a monetary or investment of it's not a situation of that where you're like, oh, they, you know, invested poorly. This isn't Sam Bradford. This is just the reality that it's the continued revolving door of the same position.
The other part to this that's really kind of interesting. Now, obviously, this is the time of year. Bruce Arians set it up, I think, every year. You want to get your rookies be able to contribute by Thanksgiving. Guess what? The game before Thanksgiving, the Cardinals had 8 rookies playing in really critical positions. They had four starters on offense, with Josh Rosen at quarterback, Mason Cole at center. Corey Cunningham, their 7th-round pick, got his NFL debut, and he's starting at left tackle. He hadn't even played a snap all year, and he's starting at left tackle. And then you got Christian Kirk. You got Chase Edmonds coming in for significant. You know, he's got a big role on the team. And then you add to that Matthew McCrane, who they signed. He kicked for Phil Dawson, who was hurt. And then, of course, you've got Zeke Turner, the undrafted rookie, who's playing a significant role on special teams as well.
So and very well.
He had another 2 special teams tackles. I think that brings him up to, I think they have him credit for, I think, 13 on the year. And that's after he picked up a whole bunch the first couple, 3 weeks, and then teams started realizing, oh, we got to block him. And yeah. So they're low, but you had 2 more against the Raiders. So rookies are playing an important role. And so now they bring up 2 of their rookies. They bring up Chris Jones, cornerback that they plucked, that they signed to the practice squad in September. I don't know anything about him, but they went to Nebraska. They bring up Jalen Tolliver, a guy that went to a school. This is apparently a real school. He's a 6'3", 210-pounder who went to the University of Arkansas, Monticello.
Yeah, it's in Italy.
And so they're bringing up guys, and this is on top of the, like I've written about, the fact that between the active roster and the practice squad, that they've got 6 rookie offensive linemen, 4 of them were draft picks. So they're not investing their draft capital. They've got 2 linemen they drafted this year, both started. They picked up 2 guys that were drafted earlier in the, you know, what was it, Rick Leonard from the Saints, Colby Gossett, and then they got a couple undrafted guys as well, Shelton Coleman and – who's the other guy? Zach Golditch. So there is a rookie movement happening. But of all the roster moves today, probably the weirdest one of all is the fact that they went out and signed Zane Gonzalez to the practice squad instead of re-signing Matt McCrane to the practice squad, a guy that they've brought back twice. They saw kick all during the preseason. And then they bring back a guy that the Browns cut earlier in the year.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where you and I have talked about this. We talked about it with the Amir Abdullah thing. Keim tends to keep an eye on guys he likes. And he allegedly liked Zane Gonzalez coming out of ASU. They just weren't going to invest in a kicker that high because he was drafted. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. When you draft a kicker, that's crazy talk. And so the question becomes more, and they've had him into workout, 19, 20 times at this point? I mean, it's only been twice, I think. Is it 2 or 3 times that he's worked out?
I think it was twice. And that I had an interesting conversation about kind of the whole thing, because McCrane and his family were completely baffled by this, because – They've been very impressed with the Cardinals organization, and just he was cut. They understand why. It was just to fill in for a week, and McCrane would like to, you know, he'd like to kind of stick on the roster, but why? I mean, here's the possibility. The idea was thrown around that since this is Zane Gonzalez's 2nd workout, that he had to be put on the practice squad to bring in him and work with him. So maybe that's a possibility, and then that'd be fine. The Cardinals could also be scouting, because they've seen McCrane. They saw him all offseason. They brought him back a couple of times with the practice squad 1 week, well, 1 day, and then he kicked for him in the game on Sunday. So they've seen it. Bring in Zane Gonzalez now. Let's take a look at another kicker just in case, and kind of look forward to 2019. I anticipated, and when they announced the release of McCrane, I felt that probably what was going to happen later in the year is that they would have brought him back to the practice squad later in the season just to ensure that they can re-sign him to a 2019 contract right after the season. And then this still might happen. I can envision with this move, if they like what they see from Gonzalez, is bringing both him and McCrane back in to compete in the offseason. That would be my guess, is that they're bringing in Gonzalez to give him a look for a little while. Okay, McCrane had his chance. We're going to bring in Gonzalez, give him his chance. Either whoever we like more we'll keep, or then we're going to see if both are worth bringing back to compete.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations, and I tweeted this out the other day. It has nothing to do with McCrane. Like, if it's Gonzalez, it's Gonzalez. If it's a guy that I don't even know off the street, it is a guy I don't even know off the street. Like, none of it matters to me in this sense. But the continued insistence, I guess that'll be the way I go about this. And we talked about Corey Cunningham, or you talked glowingly about Corey Cunningham, and rightfully so. The continued insistence by the staff, and I get that they're still trying to win football games, to play old expensive veterans over finding out what they have in young talent is just, it's one of the more baffling situations to me. And again, I get that they're trying to win games. I really understand that. But here's my question. You're not winning games with that talent. I mean, they're 2-8. Even if you take out the game, you know, even if you take out the loss last week because Phil Dawson didn't play, they're still 2-7. They're still a 2-win team. Like, I just don't get why, outside of, I understand the comfort of it, why that they will not embrace the fact that you're 2-8 and now begin to evaluate your team going into 2019. Because like you said, we've watched them evaluate kickers, whether it be Chandler Catanzaro, obviously Phil Dawson, obviously Matt McCrane. We've watched them evaluate kickers and come out on the wrong side, well, basically every time at this point, in their decision-making. And usually it's because they're kicking in practice, no-pressure situations. We've seen them excited about the development of rookies or young players on the offensive line to see them come and just get railroaded in games. And so my whole thing is, and I'm not saying like tank, but is Andre Smith really that much of a difference maker in the run game when you are perpetually playing from behind and having to pass anyways? So like, if you're going to go pass heavy, isn't it better to get a look at Corey Cunningham and see if he's a viable option at the right tackle position? Isn't it a better option to see if Matt McCrane or Zane Gonzalez are a potential long, I mean, these are young guys that are potential 9-10 year options at the kicking position, where you go into every offseason, you're like, oh, I'm not worried about that position. Like, you've got Andy Lee under contract for 3 more years. Wouldn't it be great if you had a young kicker to kind of pair with that, and Brewer, their long snapper, and all of a sudden you've got your 3-man special teams unit like locked up? So those are just, I mean, they're little things in a lost season that I, from a football standpoint, I just don't get. And I understand wanting to win games. I really do. And I'm not questioning their, I'm not saying go Raiders and like trade Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. And well, it would be accustomed to them trading Larry Fitzgerald and Chandler Jones. Like, that's not what I'm saying. Although I don't know if there's any difference in their record if they make those trades. What I'm saying is, like, if you have a old player that's bad, why not try a young unproven player in that same position to see if he is less bad and possibly a guy you can count on in 2019, or you're going, hey, we not only need a right tackle, we need a kicker coming into 2019. That's my philosophy.
And since you've already started on that, when we come back, we're going to talk about what changes we'd have to make. So Seth's already kind of talked a little bit. What are some actual changes that we would start seeing, we would like to see seeing personnel-wise or whatnot to the roster on game days? And that's coming next to the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So let's talk about what changes. So obviously, you would be a proponent of bumping Corey Cunningham over to right tackle and letting Andre Smith be the swing backup, correct?
It'd more be like Cunningham's your right tackle, and if, God forbid, our friend DJ Humphreys continues to miss games, you just move him back over to left tackle. And maybe that is part of it. Like I'm not trying to be obtuse. Like maybe they're just not even giving that a thought because they're not sure whether or not DJ Humphreys is going to be back next week.
That maybe that's true. Now, the one thing for me, at least with Cunningham, is I don't know how many reps he's done at right tackle. I think they've almost had him exclusively at left tackle. So the one concern that you have, you know, with Andre Smith, you're gonna be fine with the run game. The pass protection, it's gonna be very up or down. He's had a couple of really good games, and then the rest of the games have been kind of. The concern for me with Corey Cunningham is, can he play the right side? Is he going to show the promise, or is he going to be both bad in pass protection and run blocking because he's not used to that side of line of scrimmage? Kind of like how Jared Valdir was last year to start the year. He was a disaster.
Yeah, or like, I mean, let's be honest, like DJ Humphreys was his first season.
Oh, geez, yeah. Right tackle's been kind of a mess. So I wouldn't mind seeing that, but I definitely want to see him get reps on – because I don't know how much he's been – because all year he was like that third string left tackle. They've kind of been hiding him, and they can't hide him anymore. On the offensive line as well, I think we've already kind of made the change you have to do. Ode Obuchi, he's a guy. I don't know. But it's not like there's any guy behind him that I'd say I'd rather play. I don't know which way I go at left guard. I don't know whether Mike Iupati or Jeremy Vunovich is the better option, because I don't know exactly how healthy Iupati is.
If Mike Iupati can walk and somebody can put his arms up, he's probably better than than the guy's name I can't pronounce.
Vunovich. Now, another thing, just let's stop putting J.J. Nelson on the field. I get what he brings, but can we stop with that?
But here's my thing, right? Maybe I'm wrong. But and I know that Nelson is like a sub-4.3 guy, but there's got to be like a sub-4.4 guy just standing around that can do this exact same thing, right?
Right. Is like really the only thing he's been good for is drawing pass interference call.
Because here's the reality too: they've run that stupid jet sweep to him that like every team runs, and every team gets like 25 yards every time they run it.
He gets 8.
Oh, he typically loses yards.
Oh, and then last week, yeah, the minus 10. -10. How do you lose 10 yards?
Right. And so it's like, it's just like, how do you, you're fast, dude. Like, be fast. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. Like, maybe that's Jalen Tolliver's role. I know he's not a 4-3 guy, but like, maybe they're using him as more of a Michael Floyd, you know.
Maybe Sherfield can play that role because he's got speed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm with you on that. Like, we're in total agreement. I think another thing I'd like to see more, and this is less to do with like personnel changes, but also to do with personnel changes. Like, if you're going to do it, I talked about it on Sunday night. I couldn't remember when the game was on Sunday Night Football. Did you watch any of the Bears and Vikings game?
I hardly saw any of it because I was writing up all the stuff by that time.
So like the craziest thing to me is this: the Bears have a very talented running back in Jordan Howard. They also have an incredibly unique, I don't want to call him a gadget player because that takes away from how talented he is, but an incredibly unique gadget player Tariq Cohen. But one of the things you see consistently is them on the field together. And I don't think Leftwich is doing a bad job at all. So I don't want anybody to take this way. Like, he's been given an offense and he's trying to run plays that aren't his playbook, you know, yada, yada, yada. But can we not get these guys, David Johnson and Chase Edmonds, on the field?
They only did once. And guess what was the result of that play?
First down. Yeah.
No, it was a touchdown. They believe it was the touchdown to Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, exactly. Because all of a sudden you have more people to think about.
Well, and it's exactly what Bruce Arians was saying. You get David Johnson in the slot on one side and you get Larry on the other. Guess what? Someone's going to be open.
Right. And maybe that someone's Christian Kirk, but somebody's open. And that's what the struggle has been this year. And that's what's so frustrating is I don't consider myself a football genius or a football savant, but this seems like super basic. Like, good players should be on the field a lot. And if it means overlapping positions, it doesn't matter. Just get good players on the field together.
Right. I mean, goodness, it's not like they have quality receivers after Christian Kirk anyway. So you put Edmonds in the backfield, you line up David Johnson out wide, and you just use Fitz and Kirk. Hey, there's no problem with that. It doesn't really matter whether it's Gresham or Seals Jones at tight end.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another one. Another thing I like, and did we just talk about this before the show? I'd like to see Leftwich move Rosen a little bit. Like, we talked about him being similar to Carson Palmer, but young Carson Palmer moved around. Like, before the knee issue with the guy, Kika Van Olofton or whatever the guy's name was that blew out Palmer's knee in the playoff game, like, Palmer did work outside the pocket, but it was designed. And I think that
there was a little bit inside of this on I can't remember which one, whether it was his presser or Wilkes was on the radio, or maybe it might have been another player. They've done this a little bit, and it makes they have it designed to make it look like Rosen was flushed out of the pocket. So they make it look like the pressure got to him, but it's actually designed. So they do that a little. They haven't done that a lot, but they've done that a little.
Yeah, and so I think it's one of those things, again, you steal from young or good teams with young quarterbacks. It's something that the Bears do consistently with Mitchell Trubisky. It's something that the Rams do consistently with Jared Goff. I think it's a way to get, I mean, the Chiefs do it a lot with Patrick Mahomes. It's just a way to get them into open throwing lanes instead of having to make tight throws into tight windows from tight pockets. Like, it's just a way to offer up new, similar plays from a different platform for your quarterback.
I perhaps would like to see one of these rookie linebackers that they have do something other than special teams. What we saw in the preseason, now granted, it's still a preseason, but we saw some real positives from Dennis Gardeck, and we saw some positives, especially in that final preseason game. Zeke Turner looked really good at linebacker.
And again, it's not like you're playing for playoff positioning.
And their linebacker play has been garbage.
Right. And so instead of going into the offseason going, okay, do we need two? Do we need three? Like, if Zeke Turner can play a little bit, and I know that they have Jeremy Cash and they liked him, and he's coming back from a knee injury, but that's not the same as giving Zeke Turner live looks and saying, like, okay, he's a guy that we can play. You know,
is he going to be just a special teams guy? Exactly.
Is he? That's the thing. Remember, what they did with Justin Bethel was malpractice. They didn't give him reps at corner in games, and then they paid him like a second cornerback, and then he couldn't do it, and they were like, oh, crap. So now we have to cut our best special teams player because we're paying him $5 million a year to just be a special teams guy because he can't do anything on defense. Like, that's the thing. You can't project things just because of what they do in practice. And this goes back to my whole rant with the kickers. Like, you can't just continue to do the same thing over and over and over again and fail at it and then go back and do it again. Like, you've got an opportunity unfortunately, you have an opportunity to do different things with your team and your roster now because you're a bad football team. And it's very rare that you get these opportunities in the NFL where your fans aren't going to completely kill you if you try some things out and you work on some things and see what you can get with them. I feel like I'm a crazy person sometimes when I say these things, because I'm like, it just seems simple, and it's something that's not being done.
And with that, well, let's kind of talk about as well changes. Let's look forward to the end of the season. Based on what we've seen right now, if it were up to you, would you fire Steve Wilks and change the staff over?
You know, I wasn't a firm yes until this last game. And then when you are unfortunately out-coached and outgunned by what is a bad Raiders team, a team that has sold off their best players, I just think that I just don't know what is completely left for this team. Now, that is coming off of this game. This is coming off of the latest information we have on this team. So when you look at it from that perspective, coming off the Raiders loss, I would say it's a one and done scenario. Now, obviously, I'm hedging myself and reserving the right to change my mind if we get more consistent play like we saw against Kansas City, if we get play similar to the first San Francisco game. If you're consistently struggling even against bad football teams, let's just say this: if they go 2-14, you're going to have to sell me on bringing him back more than letting him go.
My case is this. Now, I will admit, I am a firm believer in patience with the coaching staff. And I think, based on the information that we now have on the team of how things turned out, who knew that Sam Bradford was going to be bad? We've never seen a bad Sam Bradford. So we entered the season with higher expectations than probably were reasonable.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The rest of the country thought this team was going to be dreadful. That's what everyone else thought. We knew it was going to be a transition year. We just didn't realize just how bad it was going to be, because the beginning of the year, they were supposed to have a steady veteran quarterback in Sam Bradford, who was at least going to be not bad.
And a steady offensive line that allowed them to take pressure off.
And David Johnson, who would be productive, and yeah, a defense that would be, has talent, but had to adjust.
Right. Now, that was the whole creation of the team, was this idea of our defense is going to take 6 weeks to adjust. So we're just going to ground and pound teams into the dirt until we're ready defensively, and then we can kind of open up the offense.
And Sam Bradford was dreadful. The offensive line didn't do anything. Mike McCoy had no idea what to do with David Johnson, and David Johnson plainly didn't look that good. And so everything fell apart. And the way I see it is, with a coach, especially when you have a general manager you believe in, if people still believe in Steve Keim, because if you don't believe in Steve Wilks, guess what? You can't really believe in Steve Keim, because
that was his hire.
That was his hire. And it was and you trusted him. And so unless what Wilks sold Keim and Bidwell, at least in a demeanor and approach and preparation and detail, has changed, unless the things within the building changed, you have to let him come out of this, because there were other things that were unexpected. And so now the problem is, people say, well, did you just end up just hiring the wrong guy? Maybe defensive head coaches shouldn't, maybe there should be no more defensive head coaches. I don't know. I still firmly believe that Wilks has the right demeanor for it. Has he made mistakes? Yes. But you've got to let them work through this, because otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to overhaul. So you're giving Josh Rosen a third offensive coordinator. You are bringing in a brand new staff, and you're going to be tossing out some coaches that we feel that we like. You've got Ray Brown. You haven't seen it yet. The offensive line's been bad, but Ray Brown has, unless he became Russ Grimm, he's a good offensive line coach. Byron Leftwich is showing promise. You have a running backs coach in Kirby Wilson who has all sorts of production from running backs before. You're having to churn that entire coaching staff, which means you're going to have your core players learning a new system offensively and defensively. And I'd rather see, because I believe that most of the coaches in the NFL, if given a head coaching job, are going to be okay. Every coach needs the right situation. I want to see how they come out of this, especially when you got your quarterback and you've got all that cap space. Now, what are you going to do?
Now, my question is this, and this isn't insight or like innuendo or anything like that. This is just a general question. And you can at me, if you listen to the show, at SCoxFB, your take as well. If players come to you at the end of the season and they do exit interviews and you get a Rosen and a Peterson and a Chandler Jones and maybe Fitz, and they don't believe in Steve Wilkes, do you have to pull the plug, right?
Maybe.
And I think that's the biggest thing that you and I will not know that until obviously it happens. Steve. And that's my thing is like right now, I don't see guys buying in. And so I'm reading it from a body language, like from the outside looking in type of thing. And that's how my read is. And I could be completely wrong. And I hope I am. Like, quite frankly, I hope I'm wrong, because the last thing you want to be is the Cleveland Browns. And you fire Wilkes and then you bring in somebody else that's not good. That's who you are. Like, if you do this, doing it once is not ideal, but if it happens once and then it happens a second time, like, okay, all right, well, this might be the Cleveland Browns, right? Like,
because if you look at this, the Cardinals are always super patient about hiring. And if there's going to be as many as 10 head coaching vacancies, they're going to be, and then end up being the last one to make their hire. Where is the, I mean, is DeFilippo the guy this year that's going to be the next hot offensive coordinator, you know, the hot guy on the coaching staff? Or are they going to go back to, you know, Mike Mularkey? Or are they going to go? But
that's the other thing. And I think that is an important thing to say. And obviously you can't let it make your decision for you.
Right. You can't let other teams hiring a coach
back you out of what you want to do.
Right.
But I do think to an extent you're accurate in the fact that, like, if there is – if Black Friday comes and goes and you go 6 or 7, right, like say there's 7 openings, and I'm not going to go through them, but say there's 7 openings, and then not including the Cardinals, and all of a sudden you look at it, you don't – that like the Cardinals can't be the 8th, because where would they be in the pecking order? Like, where would they be in the rankings of that? And I would guess if they finish 2-14, even with Rosen, you're probably looking at an order of like at best case scenario, 5th. So you're likely going to miss out on the top 4 or 5 alleged top 4 or 5 candidates. And so that's the question. And I think Jess is kind of hitting it on this, is like, you better be really, really sure that you got it wrong if you pull the trigger, because there's a good chance that you're not going to get your first 3 or 4 choices. And maybe that's what happened with Wilkes as well. And I don't want to speculate, but you know, I think sometimes their alleged patience just comes down to the fact that other coaches were interested in other positions more than the Cardinals and were waiting to see how the, you know, how the dominoes kind of fell. And so you don't want to put yourself in that position again, where you're hiring number five or number six on your roster or on your list of guys. And then just end up back where you are again.
Have him being the Sam Bradford of coaches.
Right, exactly. And so you can't do this again if you hire a new coach. And if that's the thing, very few people outside of me and people on Twitter are going to be belligerent about you not firing Wilkes after 1 year if you bring him back and you fail again. Like, now I'm going to be belligerent about it, but that's just because of who I am as a personality wise. Like, that's just my type. But
if it fails next year, I'd say you had to know.
Right. And I think that's fair. And I don't think you're going to get criticized for that outside of like some people. So, I mean, you're never going to please everybody. And like, I'm joking. I'm not going to like be belligerent about it. Like, I will say that you know, if they bring him back, I will say if it's 2-14, I will legitimately say, like, hey, I didn't agree with this. Like, I thought you go 2-14, even in this NFL season with the schedule you ended up having, like that's a bad season and you're a bad coach to me. But I think you're right. I think from a standpoint of like, there's a lot out of his control that went really, really wrong. So maybe
and a lot of that falls on Kime.
Exactly. And so, but here's the other thing. I've seen people have asked me this and have posed this question. Why not just fire Kime? I don't think that's an option. Again, that goes back to, do you want to be the Browns? And that's a Browns move, right? Fire your general manager and leave him with a head coach that he didn't bring in.
And especially after you just extended his contract.
Right.
So what happened in 1 year to say, okay, now we believe in you for four more years, to we don't believe in you
at all. Right. And so that's the thing. It's like, I'm okay with blowing the whole thing up, because I think I think that they're further away than they want to admit in where they want to be in terms of competing, and especially the NFC West. I mean, the NFC West is, it could be good. So, and so I'm okay with blowing it up, because I think you've got to take chances and risk at this juncture with the Josh Rosen contract in hand. But I also understand the pragmatic long-term view of like, hey, let's get through this season. Let's get through next season. And then we still have Josh Rosen under contract for 3 years before we have to like start paying him an absurd amount of money. And that's looking at it again. I think that's another thing. That's when everybody's like, oh, you don't want to burn the Josh Rosen contract. I think that's looking at it in a very Pollyanna positive light of, hey, Josh Rosen's the answer. He hasn't really shown it yet, but Josh Rosen's the answer. And so I think that's the other thing we have to remember is like, yes, you have the quarterback, and we all believe, myself included, that Josh Rosen is the quarterback of the future for the Arizona Cardinals. But if you make moves for Josh Rosen and God forbid he implodes, well, now you've just completely crumbled the structure of your organization for a quarterback that didn't pan out. So, you know, I'm arguing against my own belief here, but I also agree with you, Jess. Like, this, if you make the decision, you have to be 110% confident that that you got the guy wrong, that Kime will fix it and fix it quickly within his contract.
Right. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And hopefully, we'll see. I'm not sure what we can expect in the shows to come, but we will continue to have shows. Cardinals play the Chargers this weekend. Chargers have been good. Chargers got embarrassed.
I know. And Joey Bosa comes back. Like, what did you and I do to upset the football gods this season that not only do the Chargers get embarrassed by the Broncos, but, oh, by the way, maybe you know, one of the top five pass rushers in the NFL's back. Oh, and DJ Humphries might be out.
But Corey Cunningham.
Right. Well, that we'll definitely get to know whether or not he's legit
if
he's
tackle
against the Bosa man.
So let's wrap this up. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again. Thanks for listening to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!